Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
How to get into jazz. It is Derek G6 Volumes. I am your host, content creator, radio host, DJ, whatever you want to call me. Discord mod, Derek G here. And I'm very excited to talk about this because I'm thinking qualified, is that the right word? I'm uniquely qualified to talk about this. And I think that jazz can be quite daunting or seen as quite a snobby genre, which is sad because I have such an affinity for it. So I thought I'd create this today to be an introductory podcast, text tome. Is there a thesis to this? I forget but whether I need to do one for every single one, but I think that it's rather than a thesis of an idea, this is more of a guide, because I'm here to help. And stick around to the end because I have the appendix, which has one, an apology, which I'm very, interested to address. And then also I want to talk about where I've been at in this journey, because it's been an interesting couple of weeks, and I don't know, I feel like sharing as well. So stick around to the end. So why do I think you should get into jazz? Well, it's such a wonderful, even though it's kind of like there's a ceiling to it, genre that I think that a lot of people get intimidated by for unfortunate reasons, because it can be quite complicated, quite aggressive in its sound often, and can really not have an easy entry point. And so, disclaimers first. The disclaimer is, I'm not an encyclopedia. I'm not a musicologist. I'm not a historian. So what, as you know, in this podcast, I share with you is my personal experience and my personal love for it. So I strive to provide my own context and love behind it, more so than a history of. So I want to disclaim that, because I think it's important that you don't see this as the one-stop shop to learn everything about jazz, because there's many books and Wikipedia pages to go off for that. But until you read that, you have this. What are my qualifications to talk about this? Well, I guess as every music fan, like deep music fan, I don't know, is that even a thing? I'm generalizing. A lot of people want to learn more about it at some point in their lives. And so I went down the very typical course in a good way of like, I've told a story once before about the Rolling Stone top 500 albums of all time list when I was quite young, and picked that up from a bookstore and then devoured it and then listened to a lot of it. I'm pretty sure that's where I was introduced to it. You know, Kind of Blue was high up there. Love Supreme was high up there, and I just started buying those records and listening to them and forming a relationship and opinion on it. That doesn't give me as much qualifications as in my radio journey, which you heard on the last episode. Thank you for sharing and listening to that. I was invited to host a spiritual jazz show on a local community radio station, which basically defined a huge part of my music taste, because I didn't know a huge amount about spiritual jazz, but I was like, I want to be on radio, let's do it, I like jazz, and built up quite a collection of that type of jazz because of it. Then I played jazz on my radio shows on NTS and elsewhere, and then I became a Spiritland resident DJ, which is a beautiful hi-fi bar in King's Cross in London at a certain point in my life, and got to play those out loud on big sound systems. And for what it's worth, if you want some numbers, I have a Tokyo jazz playlist that has 20,000 followers on it. People hit me up all the time saying that they love it. Even sometimes I look up what the conversation is about my content, and a person talked about it, how much they loved it on Twitter, who happens to be an OnlyFans creator. And I thought it was wild that like so many people from so many different walks of life are into that particular playlist. So there's not really qualifications, but it's more to say like, hey, I'm not knowledgeable. I'm not some person that's picked up one record and decided to talk about it. So yeah, the context. I think obviously, jazz has its roots in blues, African American popular culture. It has roots in ragtime. It has roots in for more than 100 years. And I think because it is largely instrumental music, it doesn't have a huge amount of kind of through line, or I guess be able to pierce the armor of the mainstream in any particular way. I think that it is often seen as boring lounge music or intense. And in the oftentimes when I have experienced people saying they don't like jazz, it is because they're like, oh, it's just too noisy. It's gross. And I get it. And that free jazz is not my thing. I think that is its own level of headsy that is should and is respected, but can like delve into like math rock, you know, in terms of like, oh, it's so intelligent in these ways, but it's more like the kind of abstract fine art that you have to be along for the ride. If you know the album Captain Beefheart's and the Magic Band, whatever that album's called, that Trapmaster Replica is what it's called. You have to be in for the ride of how weird and abrasive that album is. Otherwise, you're not in for a good time. Would I play Trapmaster Replica at a party? No, because I want friends. But do I think it's an amazing record? I actually do. So, but that's not, I'm not lobbying for free jazz here. So I think that it can be a quite a barrier of entry to most people. You don't hear it on the radio. Tracks are usually improvised and often times can be 20 minutes long. So, you know, it's hard for a lot of people. So what I would like to do as I pull out my telephone is I'm going to play you a TikTok that I made regarding this, because I think it is the starting of this discussion point around jazz, because I think that there is a particular trope that is actually quite important in terms of as you, if you're watching this on YouTube, as you see me looking through my phone to find this video. But I think that it is a very important and very unique step of getting into jazz. I found it. It has 140,000 views, which is nice. I'll put it up on screen and we can listen and then we can react to it.
If you're wanting to get into jazz, here are my top 5 picks. First up, we've got Miles Davis.
There is no other album in any other genre that is as ubiquitous in terms of the first recommendation than Kind of Blue by Miles Davis. And I've been thinking about this so much. Why, if you say rock album, what's the best rock album to start with? No one can agree on that. You know, electronic album, house album, hip-hop album, there isn't going to be a consensus. But Kind of Blue, there's a consensus. Why? I'm going to break it down. Firstly, I think jazz can either put people to sleep or really turn them off because it's too free. And this is the loungiest album you can get without being lounge music because it has a modal jazz element to it. So there's enough improvisation. It's beautiful, but it's not challenging. Secondly, the first track is just like a warm hug. It's like walking into a nice, fancy hotel. It sounds nice. It's welcoming. It is calm, but it is intriguing enough to make it not sound generic. Thirdly, it's a gateway. So you have Cannonball Adderley, you have Bill Evans, you have John Coltrane, and you can kind of go like, what do you like on this? Do you like the piano player? Do you like Miles Davis, obviously? Do you like the saxophonist? Maybe check out their stuff. So it is, there's not many places where it's like a super group where you can immediately dive deep into different discographies from there and explore more. I think the funniest answer of all is that people that recommend this album, including myself, want people to like jazz and get into it. And I think you can scare people off quite quickly with going like, listen to Chick Corea, for example, or you want people to like it because they're like, jazz is fucking lame because they think of like bee-ba-da-wida, kind of like scatting jazz, or just like background music. And you want to go, there's something challenging enough to listen to, but I'm not going to recommend you something that's going to like blow your eardrums, you know? So at the end of the day, I think it is quite sincere. It's quite nice that almost everyone's come together and said, this hits that line right in the middle. Start there. We hope you like it. Enjoy. Yeah, so there you go. So that was me responding to a video of a record store recommending what albums you should listen to if you want to get into jazz. And if you want to talk about music snobbery, I think a lot of people wouldn't want to recommend that album because it's so obvious. It's like saying you want to get into pop rock, then listen to the Beatles. And it's like, well, yeah. But Kind of Blue is an important record because it kind of, and a dangerously important record because it defines so much of jazz. Because leading up to that record, it was a lot. It was getting even more experimental in a way. It was with bebop. It was very frenetic. It was very energetic. But it also is in that category of like, you know, in that classic kind of like jazz bar sound. It's like clicking fingers, tapping toes, fast music. And what Miles Davis was able to do is be more exploratory with the sound, be less about structure and more about feeling. And that album is incredible. If you know me in sound systems, if you ever just want to feel like the high watermark, I know this sounds like a lot of instrumental expression. Jeez, you can't really get much better than Kind of Blue. It's stunning. Put that on a nice sound system. It can make you cry. I don't know if I've cried over records before. I cry a lot generally. Maybe that's why. But it gets you close. So I think that why I say it's dangerously important is because I think it definitely defined a lot of what jazz was kind of perceived to be. So you've listened to Kind of Blue. We kind of established ground zero of jazz appreciation. I think what's important, I had a friend in the studio when I was doing the Spirit House radio show, and he listens to classical and some indie, and that's about it. And I was trying to explain why he should enjoy it, why it was special, why it was good. And I think it's important to kind of frame how to listen to it to an extent. The first concept that I want to discuss is modes. Modes is really important, which is basically when they talk about modal jazz, they're talking about, again, not a musician, but they're talking about a scale and also a theme that has been designed around this scale. And it's chosen in a key, minor, sad, major, happy, and they explore this mode, right? So rather than having a song which is like, say, My Favorite Things by John Coltrane. That's a song, and it has a structure, and it has a clear melody and chord changes that everyone's following through. Modes are not that. It's more like, to kind of put it as plainly as possible, someone like Miles would go, we are using these two chords for the entire song. I am now going to choose a theme. So the theme is kind of what they are kind of, so the mode is the floor. The theme is the walls, right? And that is, in the case of Kind of Blue, da-na is the theme, really. Da-na, da-na, da-na. You know, and then what happens from there is you've got the floor and the walls, and now you can decorate. And you can decorate however you like. And that means improvisation. That means call and response. It means building on top of an idea that someone had made prior. So in the case of Song Like Miles, Miles starts with the trumpet, and then we go into Coltrane with his tenor sax, and then he might go like, "Ooh, I really like what Miles did at this part here, and I'm going to take that bit and then do something else with it." And like, it's not something that you listen to and go, I don't listen to jazz and go, "Ooh, he just took that from there." But it's about this flow of having this, the freedom of these modes to be able to then dive into and elaborate on. It's almost like a conversation. And this can seem very over-intellectualized, because it is, because I don't sit there thinking this. To me, the brilliance and beauty of jazz is when it feels like everything's been let go, everything's so free, but it's also got like a very musical structure to it, that it's not free jazz, you know? So there are parts where you just, it just hits, right? And they've hit the mode, or the theme has a particular way that it's progressing, people playing off each other, and maybe it just strikes this thing where it transitions to something that everyone hits on at the same time, and you just go, whoa. And is unlike any other genre in that way, because everyone's trying to respond and conversate with one another, but everyone's trying to be in the same place at the same time. Whereas like, say Led Zeppelin and their 20-minute tracks and solos, you'll have Jimmy Page playing a solo for 10 minutes. You have John Bonham doing a drum solo, everyone walks away. It's not that same to and fro. And I remember saying that to my friend at the radio station. I'm like, just listen to this part. Okay, he's finishing up now, and the other person's coming in and doing their bit. And just wait. You know, they're not doing this twice. Like, whatever happens here is not happening again. And you can tell I'm quite passionate about it. What I've got coming up is labels, different types and my favorites. But first, a message from my new sponsor, hell yeah, which is Turntable Lab. So Turntable Lab has been a trusted source for audio gear and records for over 20 years. They specialize in turntables, turntable setups, and accessories. Everything for both beginners and hi-fi enthusiasts. The Lab also operates as a dynamic online record store with over 100,000 records in stock. Do you think they got kind of blue? I would say so. Take advantage of their 4 or more deal, where you automatically get 10% off when you purchase 4 or more records. Check them out at turntablelab.com. Also, there's a little Derek page, turntablelab.com/Derek. I've put a few things in there that I would own, or would recommend. Not that many things, 15 things. So if you want to check that out, the link is now in my description. I didn't do that last time. I did an ad read because I'm new at doing ads, but hopefully I'm an old hand, a dab hand at doing ads soon, because that means the podcast is doing well in it. Thank you, Turntable Lab, for sponsoring. Thank you for everyone for congratulating me on a sponsor. We love to see it. So, labels is a very good way of getting into jazz, to look into some of the greats. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of jazz labels. Blue Note is the jazz label in many ways. I have a playlist called Blue Note with all my collection of WAVs and MP3s. Idiot. But it is the definitive, like, it has such a span of incredible, incredible albums. And if you look into Blue Note, not only do they have incredible albums, they have incredible iconic cover designs from the 60s and 70s, mostly 60s, that are just pieces of art, modernist typographic art. So that label is very important. Impulse is very important. ECM is a low-key, big-time favorite of mine. It is a Swedish label. and have a huge discography of more of like European jazz. So Bobo Stenson is an artist I love on that label, but it's more, I guess European jazz is the best way to describe it. It is less frenetic and less free than American jazz. It's a lot more almost atmospheric and ambient. And they've got so many good things. And that is, I dreamed of being having a label like ECM one day. It's just the cover arts are beautiful. And they've really curated an incredible, incredible lineup over a long period of time. Verve is the other really important jazz label. And it's still current. It's still putting stuff out that is really worth your time. And one last one is Jazzman, that is Jazzman Gerald, who has a record label out of London, who digs up and reissues lots of jazz and has a compilation that you should check out called Jazzman. Called Spiritual Jazz, which I have a couple copies of that, which is like a compilation of some of the best spiritual jazz that you've never heard before and is very rare and interesting and cool. I probably should have left that till later, but let's go from that to more of the stickier stuff, which is the types of jazz, because there are so many, because we want you to have a good understanding of the breadth of it. And maybe something you'll hear from this is, here are the ones that I might want to check out. Here are the ones that just don't sound like me. Because just like anything, if you say rock music, there are so many genres with guitars, whether it's grunge or shoegaze or punk, or not that punk is called rock, but you know what I mean. I think there's classic rock, there's yacht rock, there's so much. So jazz on its own, a bit prohibitive in terms of discovery. Modal, like I said, is the most fun, beautiful, accessible version of jazz, which is led by the likes of Miles Davis, mostly a lot of modal jazz on Blue Note. Also mid to early John Coltrane and Kenny Dorham and Wayne Shorter and people like that in that category. And so, do you type in modal jazz? Not really, but it's like, if you use kind of blue as a base of like what modal jazz sounds like, stuff that sounds like that. I don't know if I'd go out there saying, I like modal jazz. I don't think I've ever said that in my life, but yeah, that's one. New jazz is, I would say anything from the 90s up until now, I think new jazz has a soul element to its sound and is kind of in that, I think currently is very much in the London jazz scene. Kamal Williams, I think is his name. There's kind of, and not that Duval Timothy is fully part of this, but kind of, because he's kind of like a cross between jazz classical and you know, ambient sometimes. But new jazz is more of the, I remember when I lived in London, it was a bit of a parody and a bit of a joke and it was a bit mean, but I loved it because I was adjacent to this world. But the new jazz lad was a derogatory term used for gentlemen in chore jackets, in beanies, in horn-rimmed glasses and listened to new jazz or was in a new jazz band. Hilarious. I can say that because I have had horn-rimmed glasses. I'm not a beanie person. I've had chore jackets and I do enjoy some new jazz as well. So a new jazz lad is a great, cruel but kind tease. Spiritual jazz is my favorite subgenre of jazz. It is rooted in the exploration of spirituality, of what is difficult about this genre is that it's kind of a catch-all for any spirituality in jazz. So it is said that John Coltrane explored this first in A Love Supreme, one of my favorite records of all time. That record is No words. And he explored a spirituality with these psalms and spoken word, and led onto a whole lot of other spiritual jazz disciples in many way. Sun Ra explored this space, but more from an Egyptology point of view. There is like this ethio jazz, which is like ethnic jazz that uses these sounds from different parts of the world, whether it's harps and ouds and tablas and things like that. There are artists that explore Islam. There's artists that explore Hinduism, and I'm going to be making a video, a short form video about this soon. So I'll be putting a playlist very soon about it. But it's my favorite because it explores not just, you know, modes and these themes and these scales, but drone and chants. And it's more atmospheric. It can be somewhat ambient at times. It's quite restful. It's quite meditative. It's beautiful. So, you know, I did my radio show on spiritual jazz. So that one, I think most people should find out about and enjoy, because goodness gracious me, spiritual jazz is so wide. And pick a region and look up spiritual jazz from that region, and it exists. And I think it's absolutely stunning as an experience. And I think, you know, Alice Coltrane's Journey in Satchidananda was one of my early introductions to spiritual jazz. And obviously John Coltrane's wife, and a lovely, lovely harp-based spiritual jazz record. And you see that a lot in people recommending albums. And it's a good one. And it's really cool, especially because there's not many women in jazz, to be honest. Outside of certain categories, segue, vocal jazz, swing, whatever you want to call it, is where most women exist in the jazz world. So Ella Fitzgerald, incredible singer, you know, scattered a lot, which was mimicking, you know, Dizzy Gillespie type runs with the voice. Billie Holiday, what's her name? Peggy, you know the one, Peel Me a Grape. What's her name? I'm thinking Peggy Goo right now. It'll come back to me. Vocal jazz is, I have a fondness for it in a romantic sense, almost like doo-wop. I love Ella Fitzgerald. I love Billie Holiday. Is kind of separate almost. It's closer to pop music because they sing standards. There are those elements of like bebop type singing and jazz to it, but it's definitely more on that. Like when people think jazz is like uncool, they think of like the like, you know, in Lost in Translation, there's that red-haired lady that was in the jazz band at the Park Hyatt, and she's like, ba-da. You know, it's kind of like very much lounge jazz, background in the corner, cheesy, but it is part of jazz. Soul jazz is really cool. I like soul jazz a lot. I think soul jazz really was the most prominent in the 70s, and is Donald Byrd is a good example. The Heath Brothers is a good example. There is a whole raft of just, well, I guess Donald Byrd is a good example where it's got more vocals in it. It's more soul inspired, but then you've still got jazz chords. You've got improvisation as well. And there is, I guess, it's not really talked about as much, because when people say jazz, soul jazz, it's almost closer to soul music. But Donald Byrd is kind of like almost the high watermark of that genre. And one of my favorites, to be honest. There's Gypsy with, I should have written all these names down. I'm now trying to retrieve every single one. Django Reinhardt, thank you. Thank you for your patience. Django Reinhardt, dun, 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 dun. Very fast, acoustic guitar, gypsy jazz. When I first started getting into jazz, I got into Django Reinhardt because it's what you're meant to do, I guess, but it's not something I listen to all that often, to be honest. I think it's fun. It's also quite trapped in its own little world. Free jazz is intense. Is a lot more, less about modes and more about complete freedom. And if you look at like from an abstract art perspective, it kind of makes sense because if you think about it, traditional jazz is more vocal jazz, is more bebop to an extent. And then you've got modal jazz, which is more impressionist. And then you've got free jazz, which is more abstract. I wouldn't start there. I still don't have the guts to really go to free jazz, to be honest. I don't know at what point I would listen to it to really enjoy it. So just a word of warning. Bebop, I've done a video in the past about bebop and its relationship that Jean-Michel Basquiat had to it. Bebop is fast. It is frenetic. It is Dizzy Gillespie. It is Thelonious Monk. You hear these names, they're classic names. They are reflecting the unrest of the times. They are dropping the rules of kind of like classic, slow, traditional jazz. And it's really cool. And if you, I swear, not that I've tried it, you could go for a run to it. You can really get a lot of energy from it. It is not free jazz, but it's getting closer. It's like a hurtling train. And I recommend it. I think the only way you should listen to bebop is loud. Otherwise, it's going to be annoying. Acid jazz. My dad likes acid jazz a lot, which is kind of more developed, correct me if I'm wrong, but in the 90s and 2000s, maybe late 80s, which is more like a mixture between like electronic sounds, vocal jazz, modal jazz, and is a bit like more cool and more like Verve did a lot of acid jazz in the late 90s that my dad loves. Not my favorite genre, but it's there. Afro-Cuban is another one. Says it in the name, Afro-Cuban jazz. Mixtures of both sounds, instruments, and rhythms. I love that album a lot. There's actually some really good Afro-Cuban albums that are on Blue Note. Big band swing is actually, when I was saying traditional jazz, I think that like big band Duke Ellington type stuff is kind of very much like coming from that earlier jazz of being more of the kind of bandy inspired traditional song structures that are good. I listen to that less personally. Lounge jazz, basically like Defiant, it's basically the chill lo-fi hip-hop of jazz. So for what it's worth, that one doesn't give jazz a good name. Yeah, it's like lo-fi hip-hop. It's like, it's cool, you can't hate it. It's also not really moving anything forward. Ethiopian. Lots there. There's so many different jazz types from around the world. Ethio jazz is a really cool one. A lot of great artists from there, Mulatu being one.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So let's talk about some of my favorites really quickly. John Coltrane is my absolute favorite because whilst dying, passing away in 1967, put out amazing spiritual jazz works, you know, worked on beautiful modal jazz records, has great live albums, has a deep discography. I like the saxophone. Who doesn't like the saxophone? Everyone kind of grows up wanting to play the saxophone, right? If you kind of feel like you hear like cool jazz and stuff like that. Wise One, as I think I've shared before on my platforms, incredible song. So many good songs from John Coltrane. I think he's just like, you know, I think in pop culture, he's known for Giant Steps, which is a very complicated, the key changes every like two bars or something like that. I like that song. It's wild. It's not what I listen to enjoy John Coltrane, but I just think he's an alien from another planet. I think there's a good documentary on him as well. Charles Mingus, Black Saint and the Sinner Lady, Chaos. It sounds like New York in the 60s, in the late 60s. I don't know, I wasn't there, but that was one of the records that I first picked up for jazz and was like, what is this? It's like part theatrical, part modal, part chaos, with these like haunching kind of, you know, themes that kind of just trudge along and then go really beautiful into these like landscapes that just blow your mind. Wayne Shorter recently passed away. Definitely not underground, but definitely not as talked about as much, but it just has beautiful records, beautiful, beautiful records. Freddie Hubbard is similar in terms of, I quite like Freddie Hubbard and Wayne Shorter equally. Have some lovely, lovely tracks. Obviously, try to look towards their 60s and 70s stuff. Like Miles Davis was doing stuff in the 80s and it was like quite intense. Miles Davis did things like Bitches Brew, which was quite intense. Miles Davis isn't on this list. I like Miles Davis. I like him less than the others because I think that the others went to interesting routes that Miles went so far that like that kind of like gets a bit too experimental for my ears. Lloyd Miller is a American that studied studies and music and jazz and ended up going to I have to remind myself of it, but like Persia or, you know, wherever. Persia. You know, he was into the more Middle Eastern sounds and then studied that and then made some incredible records. Donald Byrd, soul jazz, fantastic. Newer artists, Matthew Halsall does some really great modal and spiritual jazz. Colin Stetson does some fantastic experimental jazz with a baritone saxophone. He's done horror scores as well. Just wild, wild stuff. This actually leads me to the problems with jazz to kind of finish up. I think that the problem with jazz is that it kind of hit a ceiling in many ways. I think that the rules of no rules were set very early on, and it's very hard. I have, like, sure, there's lots of different subgenres. Like I said, soul jazz is a progression. Acid jazz is a progression. But I think that because it's such a classic genre with known for its brass instruments and its classic, you know, instruments, drums and guitar and things like that, it didn't really evolve to the point where it kind of became mainstream or kind of became too far from the source of, you know, the Miles Davis of the world. And so didn't evolve into, you know, jazz hasn't made its way really into dance music or things like that, or become electronic or things like that. But perhaps jazz also had its resurgence in the 90s. With sampling and hip hop and Tribe Called Quest and East Coast rap and jazz still finds its way with people like Joey Badass and perhaps that is just what jazz has become. And so maybe it hasn't hit a ceiling, but I think that the golden era kind of stayed. Take soul music, soul and R&B has evolved over time to be defined as different things to different people. Whereas jazz, you can't say like 80s jazz is like a whole different language to 60s jazz. It's not. I think one really interesting thing, this is getting really nerdy, is that it can't sound the same. What the beautiful thing about 60s and 70s jazz and, you know, anything around that time is that it was recorded on tape. And tape is alive. Tape is something that if you don't master it and put it to wax soon, that it will degrade and change the sound of it. It has an analog sound to it. And there is a recording process that sounds very analog. It's got a warmth. I know this sounds very audiophile, but trust me, if you listen to new jazz that's trying to play like Miles Davis and old jazz, you can hear it straight away. And if you like blind tested me or many people, you can tell straight away what's new and what's old. And I think part of that warmth, analog sound, you literally can't replicate it. And so new jazz is really crisp, clear, clean. You know, a lot of these recordings for old jazz was recorded in the same room. So there's this energy that comes with it. Whereas nowadays, I'm guessing everyone's in separate booths and everything's really like soundproofed. And so it's hard when you hear new jazz. It just sounds different. It doesn't sound as good. I know it can be like, well, that sounds snobbish, but I don't. There hasn't been huge, huge, huge culture-changing jazz albums in recent memory. You know, Kamasi Washington is a good recent example of a really talented, you know, newer jazz person. And I think how they've recorded it sounds really good as well. But it's interesting, right? Lastly is the lack of women in jazz generally as instrumentalists. Like I said, more in the vocal scene. I think that it's really difficult to point to many females in jazz. Why is that? I don't know. I'd have to think about them more. I'd have to look into it more. Obviously, there's obvious things about the boys' club, patriarchy, you know, what rooms you're allowed to enter and all that sort of crap. But I don't know why they're, you know, in other genres, soul, R&B, rock, whatever, you have presence, quite a bit of presence, maybe not as much a presence of women, but why not in jazz? A problem. And I'm sure quite a deep problem. And I'm sure if I looked it up to any great extent from a historical point of view, there's probably some dark things there. So it is a problem and is unfortunate. But with all that being said, hopefully by the time we've gotten this far, you understand certain language, certain things you should look for, certain things you should listen out for, maybe certain artists that you might want to get into or check out. And maybe that I've painted enough of a picture of the world as to like the breadth and depth and given more dimension to the genre for you. Because if I can do anything with this podcast is to help turn people onto music. Someone said, DM'd or maybe to put a story up saying like, I like what you do because I don't usually like people that turn music into content. And that really hit me because I never thought about myself like that, but it's true. And that's not good necessarily because it's like art as content and entertainment. But what they said was a compliment to me. And what I try to do is not just churn out stuff and oversimplify things for my own personal gain. I am trying to put you onto music. If I can afford to do that as a full-time thing, I'd love to. But there obviously is a reason why radio hosts, journalists, books, conduits exist. Because content, everything is content. So you know, nothing is perfect. But it was an interesting question. Or idea that was put toward me to think about. Get into some jazz, please. Let me know what you found. If you like this, if you have people that might like this, share it with them because I'm here to help. The appendix. I said an apology, right? You've been waiting for this. I do want to apologize because in 2 weeks ago, I did a podcast about the Fountain of Youth with music. A friend of mine, Brian, was saying, oh, I was wondering if you were trying to be more controversial with this podcast. No, I never have any intention to be controversial. I don't try to be soundbitey. I don't try to plan my you know, sound bites that I clip up and put on TikTok. I just had some thoughts about how to not get stuck in your ways. But some of that came off controversial, potentially. Not to any extent, but even on my Discord, people were like, oh, man, Derek's really calling us out. What was I calling people out for? And what I'm apologizing for is band t-shirts. Because basically what I was trying to say is like, don't get caught in the trap of materialism in music, because music is an art form to be enjoyed as an experience more than it is a product to buy and hoard. I think where I feel bad about is that it did feel and seem like I was a bit snobby about people that wear band t-shirts that show their pride for music and support the musicians they love. And I feel bad for that because that wasn't really the point. And I think that I chose, and this is not an apology in a way that there's any like pitchforks, but I want to acknowledge it because I have a couple band t-shirts. I wear them sometimes. I think honestly, when I psychoanalyze and go deep down into what the source of what I was trying to say or what I was reacting to, is that I find vinyl record collecting, which I have some, it can be a quite prohibitive to a lot of people who can't afford it, and therefore can become often an elitist type of music fan that feels like if you're not, you know, part of this gang, then you're not really an appreciator of music. It's not all of you. Most of you guys listening to this probably have some vinyl. I'm in that category too. But I think that it was really a reaction to people that are like, my vinyl means that I'm more serious than you. But I think like records are expensive. Buying physical these days, especially internationally, is expensive for shipping, for pressing. They used to be a lot cheaper. And I think I was reacting to that more than anything. Does that help or did I make my argument worse? But yeah, wear your band t-shirts, support visually how you like music. Just, I guess, think about how one can easily turn a love into a place where it excludes people, I guess, was my stance. Lastly, this last couple weeks have been really interesting for me. And this is not the normal podcast, like a Bill Simmons podcast where like he just talks about sports and then is out. I think you guys have more of a relationship with me. I've got a Discord, I chat in there. You know, I talk to you, I answer in the comments and things like that. I've realized more than ever about like the game of content creation and mental health. And I now respect more than ever people that have been doing it for a long, 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 long time. Because it's hard. It's hard to not take it personally, as Nolan White, I was chatting to on Instagram about, said, because if your views go down, if numbers don't reflect certain things, for me it was having like a lot going on in my personal life and then trying to make fun content for people. The cloud comes over your head and it can get quite dark. For me, my disposition is more towards just like frustration and can feel a bit like, what am I doing? And I think I feel like I've come out the other side of it. The analogy that I shared and what I've learned is that like it's almost like cutting back a tree, a branch, a shrub. I don't know. I'm not a gardener. A plant, in order for it to thrive in the next season. I think that's what it was. I think I needed to go through a period of shaking all my leaves off and some leaves dying and it looking a bit gray. And then you cut it back and you know. And then you come out the other side feeling inspired and reset, I guess. So, yeah, I'm human. There's ebbs and flows with this and I'm still new at it. And I realized, you know, I've done maybe 15, 16 episodes of this now every week now and it's fun. And it's been really exciting to explore and expand. And I, on that note, thank you so much for listening. And hopefully you go away from this having written down some names. Go listen to A Love Supreme. My God. My God. Go listen to that. Enjoy your week. Sleep well. Eat your breakfast. Drink your coffee. Have a cake once, maximum twice a week. And I'll see you next week.